Hey, you got the morning show with Aaron. That's local music, Salty with Evergreen. We're keeping it local. John Lawson's in the studio. Welcome, John.
Kia ora.
So we're here today to talk about local politics. So let's go to the community board agenda. You've made your own list, so we'll work off that one. Bow Street Water Tower Planting Plan. And you can see this on the agenda, which is online, which you'll have struggled to find. But John's put it on the Whangaroa Environmental Defence Facebook page.
Which has a link to the original page. So if you want to read the original thing, have a look at that and click the link. Or go to Waikato District Council and look for meetings and look for Raglan Community Board and look for this one. You eventually get there.
So it's going to be nice. But how much is it going to cost, John? To plant all those plants.
When they did the ones down Bow Street, it was about 26,000. So that was, three or four years ago. So my guess is it's going to be 30,000 plus.
So this is by the water tower, all along that bank there, which is just grassy bank, and a little bit round to the corner that you see as you drive in from Hamilton toward the middle of town.
I think it was probably part of the resource consent conditions for digging all that area up for the water mains. So I think it's probably coming out of our water rates rather than our general rates.
It's making it look prettier than it was.
Yes.
And now that we're having this discussion about, and it was quite a serious discussion with Dennis Amor last week about whether the council can afford to keep doing all the things it's been doing, I've got to say that might be something like beautifying an area that no one's ever had a problem with. That we could have saved a few dollars there, but I guess compared to the overall cost of the water mains replacement, it's probably small change, isn't it?
Yes. But I hope as we go on this morning, we might get down talking about the annual plan for the district, which was going to be the long-term plan, but it sets out quite a lot of the amounts that they're spending money on. So they're spending well over $300 million as a council in the coming year. And they're asking what they might save money on. They're not asking what they might spend money on. It seems to me that there are some things that ought to be done that they're not doing.
Well, I think they're trying to make a point now because, it's very clear that it's a struggle from here on to make things work financially, especially since the government has put the Three Waters problem back on the councils. Their complete lack of a plan B after getting rid of plan A has not been helpful, but there we are. Do you want to get to that later, John?
Yep, and we can talk about the traffic lights and things like that. Yeah.
Oh, yes. The Wainui Reserve, what have you got there?
I've put these down in the order of things which haven't been mentioned before on community board agendas, so that's why these things are up the top of my list. So they're looking at doing a plan, or at least getting some sort of management together for Wainui, because you might remember that the previous mayor got rid of the advisory committee that existed for the coastal reserves.
Yeah, so can we go through the history a little bit? There was a coastal reserves committee, but before that there were several committees, one of which was just purely about Wainui Reserve, and they were the group of people who beautified Wainui Reserve, took it from being just a piece of farmland and planted all the trees, and we got the glade there where the dance show happens every second year, and there's the walkway through and the trees, and the trees that are planted as memorial trees, and all that work. And so there was originally a committee for that that got put into with a couple of other committees and became the Coastal Reserves Committee, and then the previous mayor indeed heard from his staff about the squabbling and bad behaviour on that committee. And it's true that was happening, but his solution was just to get rid of it. And that is, it's an anti-democratic move, I guess we could say. I'm not trying to be like really condemning there, but that is anti-democratic in its nature. But now what's happening, John? Someone trying to undo that.
Well, there's mention in the community board agenda that there's a plan to put a group of stakeholders together to develop a 30 to 50 year plan for the development of Wainui Reserve. It always worries me when I see the word stakeholders, because I'm not quite sure who's included in being stakeholders.
Are you?
Apparently not.
You're a friend of the Wainui, right? You're part of the group that goes down every Monday morning?
Not every it tends to be Thursday mornings these days, but yeah, come down at 9 o'clock on Thursday morning when the weather should be better than it is at the moment.
Yeah, and
can help do the weeding and all that sort of thing.
Yeah, so for how many, like 30 years there's been this group of people?
1993, yep.
Yeah, so 30 years. Group of people doing this work. And I would have thought they were stakeholders, John. I would have thought you guys were stakeholders. maybe they haven't got hold of any stakeholders yet.
But apparently they've been looking at the old Harbour Care site, and staff and interested community groups came along, and apparently Friends of Wainui weren't an interested community group.
You're the point of contact for Friends of Wainui?
Yes.
Okay, all right. There we go. There's the facts, people. Shall we move on to...
Which is why it always worries me when I see stakeholders, because that means they're picking the people that they feel like talking to rather than anybody who feels that they've got an interest in it.
You should be nicer to them, John. Suck up to them a bit more.
And then we wouldn't get anything at all done.
Point made. I do agree with that. A bit of selection. That one really was done under the radar because I wasn't aware of that. I've become aware of from other people I know who've been talking about it.
Well, the whole issue of Harbour Care was done under the radar, so I think it's a great pity that we've lost Whangarei Harbour Care. And it has gradually come about over the years, and I think there was one particular personal issue that sort of triggered it, but it seems a pity that it wasn't given wider publicity and people asked to come in and help with saving it. I'm sure lots of people would have felt that it was worth saving.
So
it could be that those people are the interested group that came together and feel that it's worth doing something with that site.
Yeah, I mean, I've heard stories about how that all came about how it ended, but they're not at the level that I would report on.
No.
So, yeah, sorry.
It's a personal issue, and I'm not going to talk any more about it.
Yeah, sorry, folks. Wainui Reserve, Wainui Bush Car Park. Not a bush car, that's not a thing. It also says beach. Wainui Beach Car Park. So they're about to do, some resealing there or something,
yeah,
John?
Well,
same as Papahua?
I think we knew about this one and about the Papahua car park as well.
Yeah.
So they're just confirming that they're going to do these between 2nd of April and 28th of May for Wainui, and that they're looking to complete the one at Papahua, the other side of the footbridge, by the 11th of May, which is when there's a walk-a-rama happening.
I don't know if it's by the 11th of May. I did ask Dennis Amor about that. He said they can...
Right, so like works are looking to be completed before then, referring to then as Saturday the 11th of May when Wakarama is on.
How many construction projects have you known to finish on time?
That's why it says looking to.
Yeah. So, as Dennis Amor pointed out, the community board chairperson, like normally you leave all your gear on site. They can just take the gear off site for that weekend. And same for the soccer's probably, I'm guessing the kids' soccer starting the weekend before. So they just will work in with them, I'm told. Now we're at the long-term plan. Do you want to talk about that now, John? The enhanced annual plan.
Yep.
With extra anything? With extra stress?
Well, it's an unusually long document for an annual plan, and they're asking in particular that question about what do you want to drop in next year's long-term plan. So I think that's probably the most interesting part of it.
Can I just give the background?
Uh-huh. Which you've probably done loads of times. So
I feel like, well, this one in particular needs it. Like normally, the long-term plan is every 3 years the council reviews its spending for the next 10 years, with a particular focus on the next three, and then on the years in between they do this annual plan where they tweak it. This year they were unable to do the long-term plan because the government turned up with no plan B. They said we're getting rid of the Three Waters, and then they got into power, and I guess the bureaucrats said, "So what are we doing?" And they're like, "Oh, we don't know." So they came up. I'm paraphrasing a bit of guesswork here, but the end result is 6 months after the government came in, the councils are still throwing their hands in the air going, we don't know what to do because it's just too unpredictable. We don't know where we're going to be in a year's time. So they have been given permission to just delay their LTP, the long-term plan, for a year. So this year we're getting, it's called an enhanced annual plan. Sounds like the long-term, the work they did for the long-term plan is there, and they've just put a new label on it, John.
Yeah, I think that's a reasonable guess.
To a degree, yeah. Yeah, but with the but then with the proviso that they can change it in a year's time.
Yep, so they get their cake and eat it.
Yeah, not much cake though, eh?
No.
No, it's well, more, it's more like bread and butter.
I was watching a TV One question and answer with the local government minister. And
oh, John.
He was eventually tied down saying, well, no, there aren't going to be any rate increases as a result of this.
Well, that's not what the councils have been saying.
Yes.
Hamilton City Council was very explicit. They were already facing a 25% rating increase, and then when the Three Waters stuff was thrown back to them, they said, well, this is going to make this even worse. Whakatane District Council, it's not. I haven't gone around looking for this info. In fact, I barely read the news, but I'm aware of two councils. Whakatane District Council saying in 3 years' time they're going to have to start downgrading the quality of their Three Waters services because they literally can't raise the finances. And this is the thing for the people who got very excited about the co-governance issues was that there was a side issue on the back of some real infrastructure issues, and yeah, Whakatane District Council has made the obvious choice. Well, it's no choice that they just can't afford to do anything anymore.
Well, this was why Jack Tame kept on questioning him until he gave a very reluctant and I think probably a promise that he could skip out of, saying no, there won't be any rate increases.
Well.
Have a look at one of Jack Tame's interviews, and you'll see how it went. But
yeah.
It's almost as if he couldn't answer a question or couldn't understand the question because he kept repeating the same question until eventually he got this very lukewarm reassurance.
I'd hate interviewing politicians. In fact, I usually refuse to. I like to have a conversation with someone who's engaged in the conversation and not trying to play games with words. I'd get fed up and I'd just say, can we get rid of this guy and bring in someone who'll actually tell us something useful?
Yep, maybe all the national media ought to do that and they get apologies to answer their questions.
The problem is that the national level media, they get there's a lot of status derived from who they talk to. So if you're talking to the ministers and the prime minister, then you're a high level journalist, and it's hard to ignore that as an issue when you're a journalist. Like, you want to talk to the people. Yeah, anyway, moving on.
I think the most interesting part about the extended annual plan is that they ask this question at the end. Next year we will be reviewing the services we provide. Have a look at the services on page 18 of the consultation document. Are there any you want us to look into reducing?
So, yeah. Well, that's why I thought about that planting up around the water tower, planting in an area that's never been planted. Do we need that? Really?
Probably not. There's probably quite a lot of other things that we don't really need. And it does refer to page 18, but in fact I think page 8 is a much more useful place to look at because it has a pie chart there showing you what the amounts are. And it shows things like roading as being the most expensive thing that the council spends money on.
Which we knew... Oh, is that this one, John? That's the regional transport one.
Yep.
Oh, I've not got that one, have I?
Probably not.
Okay.
Let's see if I can...
No, it's not there. Don't worry, it's all right. We know that we always knew that roading was the main part of what the council did. That'll be the big blue one, is it?
Yes.
Yeah, and
so the big next blue biggest... one on the left-hand side, if you go to page 8 of the consultation document on the annual plan, and... There is a further breakdown in two separate documents of what the spending is, and I'm still working my way through that to see what the spending is.
So corporate and council leadership, that's a big one. That's
maybe
basically...
it's an appropriate time to mention $200,000 being spent on the traffic lights for the single lane bridge.
All right, so we'll stop talking about the pie graph. I was just going to mention that the corporate and council leadership, council staff.
That big blue blob on the left-hand side is $200,000 for the traffic lights.
No. This is John. No one's even going to follow what we're talking about. All right, let's just cut from that. We can tell you there's a pie graph if you want to look at it. And John will put it on the Whangarei Environmental Defence website after this show, will you, John? Now that I've said that, you have to.
I'm not sure that it's already there, but yep.
I've had a look. I can't see it. But then you want to talk about the traffic lights. So what have you uncovered?
Well, I haven't uncovered it. It's in the annual plan consultation.
That's when you put stuff in there and it's available to the public, no one reads it. It is like you've uncovered something because I wasn't aware of it.
Yep. Well, certainly it's not any of the headline news in there, but it does mention that new trial traffic lights will be installed on Wainui Bridge to manage high traffic volumes in peak times. The project will cost $200,000, which, when you compare it to what they're spending on buses and bus shelters and cycle lanes and such like, is an awful lot of money. But when you compare it to what they're spending on building new bridges in Pōkeno, which is $2 million, then it's only a drop in the bucket.
It's certainly cheaper than building a second lane on the bridge.
Yes.
But it's not the same as a second lane. Let's be clear. But on my question, when John told me this before he told me off the air, I was like, we don't need that. We're perfectly capable of working out who should go on the bridge. We take turnabout. We mostly ignore the sign. Sometimes it's used as an indicator if there's a bit of a if you can't tell who's got right away. But usually we just take turnabout, and it's always worked itself out. I know that there are busy weekends in summer, Sound Splash weekend. They've had is that the only weekend they've put people on the bridge doing a stop go?
As far as I know, yes.
Yeah. Okay. So that it's not like they're going to say, and Sound Splash will be paying for that. So they're not going to. Like if we had a situation where for 3 months of the year there were stop-go people on that bridge because it was so busy, then that would be worth putting in, definitely worth putting in traffic lights. But I don't think this will go down well in Raglan. I mean, probably one of the problems with the council is there's such high staff turnover. There's probably no one there now who remembers the year they put up temporary traffic lights and they got thrown in the water. So somebody should remind someone in council about this, I feel. I mean, maybe it's a good idea, but
we have got a month to respond to this, so I'm guessing that some of the responses might mention that.
Yeah, I'm wondering if anyone on the community board was aware of this, or this is a staff idea.
Well, it's not mentioned in the community board agenda, but it is mentioned in the annual plan. So, in fact, it's mentioned twice in the annual plan because there's a long, for the first time ever, as far as I recall, there's a long and fairly detailed list of what money is being spent on, both capital spending and operational spending.
Well, we'll applaud the council for doing that and send our apologies in advance about the amount of trouble that will cause them. But that's democracy. It's kind of what you get, I guess, because it is much easier to run the council if the people are not involved. Like everything.
Yeah, well, that was the attitude of the mayor before last, that the less you tell people, the less they can grumble.
Is that the previous mayor or the previous mayor?
Peter Harris.
Yeah, the previous mayor. John's memory goes back a long time, like an elephant.
That was a comment that was made when he retired, and the Waikato Times printed that, so I can get away with it without having a libel case.
Ah, I see. Okay, so what else have you picked out of the enhanced annual plan, John? Oh, no, this is the long-term plan, isn't it?
Well, no, it's the annual plan.
It is the annual plan.
Yeah, which is why we don't know when the footbridge is due to get replaced, because the previous annual plan said 2031. So I don't know
which footbridge?
No, the single-lane bridge.
Ah,
so they are planning to replace that at some stage.
I think they're planning to not replace it. You and I have both watched over, what is it, 12 years now? It keeps going back. The two-laning of that bridge. And is it a replacement or a two-laning?
Yeah, it's right, like that Alice in Wonderland phrase where it was always jam tomorrow and jam yesterday, but never jam today.
Yeah, so that applies. But we've got to ask, it's very expensive to build a bridge. Is it? Do we really have enough problems that justifies the expense of putting a two-lane bridge there at the moment? I don't think we do, really. Not really. I know there's a few hassles in some of these days, but it's not that big a deal.
Yeah, well, I think it fits in with increasing our population from 3,000 to 12,000, which is another thing that I did this week, which was to talk to the future plan group, or future proof group, and point out that they hadn't done a corridor study on the main road.
I bet they were pleased to hear from you, John.
I think they were, because they asked me for a copy of my presentation.
So you'll see that turned up as an official council document shortly.
I was just pointing out all the issues that there are to get the main road into a state where it can take four times or so as much traffic as it is at the moment.
So this comes back to having a structure plan or some kind of future plan for Raglan, like a proper future plan. And there's so many things that come to mind. We've talked about the Koning Farm being developed. Did we talk about that last time? 400 new sections going to come online there soon. It'll be a few years before you start to see anything for sale, but it's the ball has started rolling on that one. So that's an extra 1,000 sections coupled with Rangitahi, and there might be even more from Rangitahi because they got approval to develop further up the back of the peninsula.
Because my question is it worth spending all that money on State Highway 23 in order to accommodate what's a relatively small number of houses in terms of what they're looking at throughout the Waikato?
So hold on, back a step. What are they proposing to do with State Highway 23?
Well, they're not. All they're proposing is to do a corridor study sometime in the indefinite future.
So what is a corridor study, very briefly?
Well, they've done corridor studies for all the other growth areas.
Look at the road, what happens along the road?
Well, the road and the railway. We haven't got a railway.
No, so the road. whether it can handle future growth, is that what it's about?
Yes. On the others, they've looked at what improvements are needed to the roads and the railways and the public transport in order to cope with the extra people they're proposing to put in those areas. And because they're already quite good, it doesn't take an awful lot of extra money to get them up to that standard.
Yeah.
But if you think of all the various problems we've got, we had the obvious one last year with the slip.
Imagine the population was double here.
Four times, yep.
Or even, well, I didn't want to do that because it's even scarier.
It's too unimaginable.
We would have destroyed the roads, the backup roads, I imagine. Like they would have really suffered.
Yeah, well, they were falling apart even with a month of use with the current population.
So. Exactly, yeah. So I don't think they could have handled even double, never mind quadruple. So is it sensible to keep developing out here? And we know those houses are going to sell fast, because this is the other question. When Rangitahi was being debated and there were the hearings about whether that project would go ahead, there were lots of people predicting what the future demand in Raglan would be. But I think there's a real spanner in the works of that now, because the whole country is suffering from a housing crisis. And I think if you open up a piece of land for development anywhere, it's going to sell. So we could open up every farm. You could stand in the middle of Raglan and look at all the green land all around Raglan, open all of that up for farms, and you could probably open those farms up for subdivisions, and you could sell all of it because there's just such demand in this country. So I don't think it's not our job to soak up the demand for the whole country.
Well, the problem is, as I say, how do you cope with having four times as many people using a road which already has a high crash rate? And you look at the crash, which I showed them last week at the hearing, that the figures which the Waka Kotahi produce showing just how many serious accidents and deaths there are on that road.
So you were presenting at the regional council.
Well, it's under the auspices of regional council, but it's actually the regional council and the district councils around Hamilton who all get together as what they call future proof.
Well, that makes sense.
They're looking at how they plan for the next 40 years, 50 years.
So you're saying our road is going to have to require a lot of spending. State Highway 23 will require a lot of spending.
Yeah,
and maybe right. One of the backup roads needs to be a better quality road as well to cope.
Well, we probably need alternatives because it's an awful long way around to go. Well, I suppose they could improve Old Mountain Road. Again, that would be very expensive. So.
There's a reason we stopped using Old Mountain Road and made the deviation, isn't
there? In the 1880s.
Yeah.
Sorry, 1910s.
Yeah. Or even the Waitatuna Road. But yeah, because it was such a long way around, I only did that drive once, and I was like, this is terrible. This felt like such a long time. So I know why everyone was using all those other roads. Where do we go from here? We don't know.
Get a result from that hearing eventually, so we'll see whether they've taken any note of it.
It sounds like they were listening, John.
Yeah, well, I think they were surprised because they obviously weren't aware of the issues in this area, or in fact that there was the mention that it was a study still to be done, because I think they've been looking at the bigger areas and thinking, oh, all these studies have been done, we're okay, and they hadn't realised that the one for State Highway 23 hadn't been done.
I mean, I can see how their attention would be diverted to like that's the main the main corridor for the country, State Highway 1. There's, they've got to be ready for all the growth that's inevitable around that. But yeah, so that's it. So that's, you've actually brought up something that I hadn't thought much about here or at all for Raglan, is that,
because of course we were aware of the slip last year, but if there was a major flood down the valley in between Tiuku and the substation at the corner of the road off to the hot springs, then the only deviation there would be around Vicarfia.
Yeah, that's, or helicopter.
Or boat, yeah.
or what, around the Cape at the north of the Cape Reinga. So we just don't have a plan for this community. And the other thing I haven't mentioned was that there's this whole idea of a bypass road, which I think has primarily been mooted by the Rangitahi development by Raglan Land Co. If we put that in, we wouldn't need to two-lane the bridge, but that's expensive.
Because they're planning for both of them around about the same time.
How much will a bypass road cost? We're talking tens of millions of dollars, aren't we? Like, that's a huge project. Who pays for that? The council pays for that?
I'm guessing that would come out of development fees. Because every time somebody builds a new house and needs planning permission for it, they pay a proportion of fees towards improving roads and parks and libraries and all the other stuff.
Are the development fees high enough? We're watching costs going through the roof at the moment. And like Dennis Amor was asking this question, I asked this question of him last week when I talked to him on Thursday. He's deeply concerned that those fees are high enough to actually pay for the load that's going to be put on the community. Have we got an extra 1,000 houses coming online?
Well, that's why the graph or the pie chart that we're looking at has a red blob in the bottom corner of it, which shows how much is spent on resource management.
What does that mean, John?
That's the difference between those developers' fees that are paid when you get your resource consent and what it actually costs. We're subsidising the developers to that extent.
I know the developers will be thinking that they want to minimise that number as much as possible. That makes sense. But yeah, there's a real question about that. There's not as much money around as there used to be, and there's a big discussion to be had about that, but that's not a local politics discussion. We just need to keep harassing the council for some kind of plan for this community.
So that's costing about 5% of our rates.
Resource management. What is, name something that's spent that they do with the resource management budget.
They pay staff, and they pay for cars for staff to go and look at issues, and it's generally administration cost, and that's what the new government's promising, that they're going to do away with lots of these costs, but they haven't been done away with so far.
If they are done away with,
then we might end up with development all over the place, and that was the whole point of having a planning system, that you didn't just allow people to put their factory next door to your house or whatever.
This government is such a bunch of idiots. They're taking away the planning part of it. When you build a house, you don't just hire a builder and say start building, do you? That would be stupid. So this is building consent and resource consent costs is what you're talking about. So I know everyone hates them. I mean, I've built houses and I hate the days when the building inspector turns up. Right, we all struggle with that. We hate the process of waiting for resource consent and all that stuff. But what we hate even more is someone building a factory next to our house or a multi-story building or, you know, planning. Like, we've just had a 10-minute discussion about the need to plan better for our community, and these clowns want to take away a lot of the planning stuff. And the thing is, I think they talk to developers, big-time developers, and they say, you know, what's the trouble with the housing crisis? How can we make it better? And they said, well, if you can cut back some of those planning, some of those costs, that would be great. But that's not the cause of the housing crisis. It's not caused by building consent departments, right? I know of someone in the building industry working on a project at the moment where they've cut the building consent time down to a quarter, right? So that's 3 weeks quicker. These buildings are happening 3 weeks quicker. That's not going to solve the housing crisis. Right, it's just such a load of nonsense. I used to work in the building industry. It frustrates me to hear this because I know that the building consents, as frustrating as they are, they're not the cause of the housing crisis. The regulatory environment is not the cause of the housing crisis.
Well, the government would like us to believe it was, but...
they don't know. Well, I don't think they know. I think
one of the problems is they've still not come up with the legislation, so it's like Three Waters. They're proposing scrap things, but they're not proposing what's going in its place. And again, Jack Tame was pressing the local government minister and Minister of Transport. He's got both hats on those issues, and he was having difficulty answering them. So
it's Simeon Brown.
Yes.
He looks a bit wet behind the ears, doesn't he?
Well, he is probably the youngest minister, but if that's what you mean, yes.
Well, he's the youngest, but also there's more than that, I think.
his experience is in law and banking, which
so he's
means
disconnected.
That the ministries that he's got don't have that much to do with law and banking.
I think he feels very disconnected. He feels like a very ungrounded individual to me. I think he needs to go out and dig some ditches and things for a little bit and then come back and be the minister. I think that would help immensely.
Yeah,
and that would also make me laugh.
The Jack Tame interview was his body language as he was answering questions. I recommend having a look at that interview.
Good for a laugh.
Well, I'm not sure you laugh or cry, but yeah.
Yeah, thank you, John. All right, so this long-term plan, no. This enhanced annual plan thing is open now for people to make comment. If you want the council to spend some money on a project of yours that you think is important, like a kid's sports field or something like that, this is the time. If you don't think we need traffic lights, is this the time to say, no, we don't need traffic lights? What were you thinking?
It's probably also the time to say, why don't you spend that $200,000 as you were planning to in the last long-term plan to get a local bus service? So certainly that's what one of the
question.
There's contradictory things on this. So
hold on, background. For the last 3 years we've been like, we're going to get a local within an internal Raglan bus service, and they have been working on it, but then it got held up by regional council.
Mm-hmm. Maybe because the shortage of bus drivers.
Okay, all right. So we're hoping, are we worried that it might just disappear?
Well, as I say, there's contradictory statements. The district council says, in the coming year, Waikato Regional Council will also undertake more bus trials in our district.
Okay.
But then you look at what regional council is saying, and they're saying that due to financial constraints, a new local on-demand service for Raglan has been postponed until funding from Wakutai has been received, which isn't going to happen under this government.
So we were never getting funding from Waka Kotahi, were we?
Well, the original idea was that half of the funding was going to come from them, but even under a Labour government, the council did it in such a way that they didn't qualify for that funding.
Then the council decided to put more of their own money, didn't they, district council?
No, they decided to use the $100,000 that had been allocated each year in 2 years rather than 3 years.
Have a
reduced service.
Or a shorter time.
Yeah.
Okay.
But still use the $300,000, but now that $300,000's disappeared entirely out of the program as far as I can see, unless it's included in some other figure. But as I say, they've got a fairly detailed breakdown of what they're proposing to spend money on, and I can't see it in there.
Unless someone's passionate about this on the community board, I think it's going to die. This is just my feeling right now, and I know I'm feeling quite...
On the community board or in the community, so if the community board and the community say we'd rather have the money spent on $200,000 for a bus rather than $200,000 for traffic lights, then, you're probably right.
Actually, that's the thing. Like, I can see why people in council would think, really, internal bus in Raglan, it's probably not going to fly, but then to turn around and spend the same amount of money on traffic lights...
Well, also they've spent that money on Tamahere. So Tamahere has got a new bus service, which is pretty much what they were offering to us.
I was going to say that's where the rich people are, and the rich people always get served better. But the rich people also don't need buses; they're not transport poor over in Tamahere.
Well, I think it's the difference between having two councillors in a constituency and having one. So you've got two voices to speak up rather than one.
Yeah, and also two minds just to carry various issues. Like I would find it hard if I was doing any of this, where it's really easy to sit here and criticise, and I've got John next to me who seems to remember everything, but it's very hard to carry all those issues as a single councillor or as a single community board chair. I've watched over the last 10 years, things always they don't get forgotten about, but there's other things that get prioritised.
Because in the regional council report, they said that the Raglan local bus was, however, one of the service options to replace the airport flex bus. But instead, that airport flex bus is now operating in Tamahere rather than here.
What the heck is the airport flex bus?
Well, that was the problem. Nobody ever knew about it, which is why it failed.
This is the first time hearing of this. What was the story, John?
For a couple of years, Regional Council was running an almost empty bus to and from the transport centre and the airport, which was a very good bus, except that it didn't run at most of the times you wanted to catch a plane. when you did catch it, then it was at the far end of the car park, so you had to look for it in the airport.
Okay, so this is not a local Raglan thing, that's why I don't know about it.
Well, it could have been a local Raglan thing, because Regional Council was saying that bus could be moved to Raglan if we don't get the other funding. But in fact, the District Council decided that that bus was going to go to Tamahere and not Raglan.
Tamahere, good on you.
So it's now operating to the places around Tamahere.
All right, is there other stuff we should be talking about, John? We've got like 10 minutes.
Well, we only just started on the community board agenda, so I diverted us on to the annual plan.
Some of the stuff has been answered by Dennis Amore, and I don't think we've put out the interview's been put out, but we were going to write it up, and I don't think that's gone out yet. We're just waiting on Dennis to get back to us with any corrections before it goes. But they can answer about the CCTV, Manu Bay Breakwater, Greenslade Playground, all that kind of stuff. Is there stuff you want to...
There's probably nothing all that amazing in there, which is why I put a few things up at the top of that list, and the other ones are just things that we've heard about, so that they are proposing to get around to do what they're still calling the Wean Era Walkway, but sometimes has different names, the one that goes around from the jetty to the fire station. And that's going to be happening start mid to late April.
Oh, no, I've got a better thing to ask you, John. Forget about these little things, because we have answered them and they'll be on our website and maybe even in the paper. The Harbour Board land, we've seen the uproar in the community about landlords and rent of properties.
Yep, we've lost we've lost one and might lose the yacht club, so they... The bulk food shops now move to the old regional council headquarters in Hamilton East.
Yeah, I don't think we're going to lose the yacht club. That's what I'm hearing on the street, but we'll see. But we did lose Swap. We're losing the $2 shop, although that's not on the Harbour Board land. So the Harbour Board land, is that the block from
it's the whole
Wild Cafe? That it's on the corner of that block.
Yeah, well, it's the whole block, which you go down to the bottom of Bow Street, and everything on your left-hand side as you go down, once you've passed Wainui Road, is that harbour block.
Yeah, and so...
Which, again, is controversial because it used to belong to the local hapu, but in the 1870s they decided to give it to the Harbour Board.
And the Harbour Board doesn't exist anymore. Is that administered by the council?
Yes.
Okay, and... Is all of that land leased to Tony Bruce?
I'm not sure whether all of it is, but certainly a large part of it.
A large part of it, because that's the issue that's been discussed. So it gets leased to him as a landlord, and then he rents out the buildings on it I think it's... This is where it gets really tricky. I actually talked to a valuer about this, but I'm still a little confused. It's like a double rent situation. So if the council's rent is going up, obviously the landlord's going to pass that on to the person renting the building, and the council is determined to match market rates, which I actually think I really want to question this for the council, because obviously they've got staff in there and their job is to maximise income from any property that they have, and that income is spent on harbour board or stuff in the harbour, like the wharf and boat ramps and stuff like that. So that's good, but what I've been told is that the rent is tied to the value of the land underneath it, and the value of the land has probably increased tenfold in the last 30 years, something like that.
Well, that applies to most of Raglan, yeah.
Yes, yeah, that's what I'm basing it on. That's a very vague number, but you know, if I get the dates right, it can make it exactly tenfold. So that yeah, that's forcing the rents up in town. And the council has obligations. They have legislative requirements to look after the four well-beings of the community. I don't know what they are, John. You don't
social,
know.
Social, environmental, economic, and what's the other one? Cultural, I think.
Yeah, so for the council to be participating in what is basically a broken housing rental market, because I would say our housing and property rental and all that stuff, that's it's broken at this point. It's just spiralling out of control and continuing to do so.
Well, some of us put in submissions on the district plan saying that there should be restrictions on what change of use there could be to shops down the main street. Because we're ending up with estate agents and cafes as the main use.
Well, that's an outcome. I don't know. I'm more concerned about the fact that the council is just participating in this, in the property madness that we're suffering from in this country, and they should be looking to their legislative requirement, their four well-beings, and saying, okay, we're not going to charge market rent anymore for these sites, so long as it gets passed on to the people actually renting the buildings, which could be a bit of a trick. But, yeah, that's, you know, and everyone's giving the landlords a hard time, and that may be rightfully so. But I think this is a situation too with the council where, because people talk about the market like they talk about the tides, like it'll be high tide at this time, and you talk about it as if you can't do anything about it, because you can't do anything about it. When they talk about the market and market rent as if you can't do anything about it, but you can. You don't have to charge market rent, and the council certainly doesn't have to.
I'm not sure that it does, because I'm not sure what the legislation is that they're operating under.
Yeah, I want to find out. So Lisa's hopefully going to get me someone to talk to from within council who understands the details of what's going on there.
Okay, that would be good.
Yeah, that would be nice. So anyway, I'll get off my soapbox now and give you some time to talk. John, have you got something you want to talk about?
Apart from local things, the other national things that are happening that I'm interested in are the fast track approvals bill that we've briefly mentioned. So we've got till the 19th of April to hopefully flood the government with submissions on that and say we don't think it's a great idea to mine in national parks or whatever else Shane Jones decides he wants to do.
You know they're going to ignore it, don't you, John? How do you feel about that? I'm giving you the pessimistic. You mentioned Simeon Brown before, and now I'm in a bad mood.
It depends how many submissions they get. I mean, already the opinion polls are showing that these things aren't popular. And if they get lots of submissions, then that adds to that feeling.
They seem to be on a charge to burn up, see how fast they can burn up all their political capital.
Yeah, well, maybe the idea is they'd burn it all up in the first year and recover it in the next 2 years. So.
Who knows? Or maybe they think everyone hates Jacinda so much still that, and people do still do. Talking, I see them talking about her online. Yep. That they can get away with it.
And the other thing they're doing, of course, is that policy statement on transport.
So is that done?
Which is Simeon Brown's. No, we've got till 2nd of April, just done a week's time to get submissions and on that. So
this
even if it's only signing the petition, which is online, to say you don't like it, that's worth doing.
So I messaged over a month ago now Waka Kotahi to say, what are you doing about State Highway 23? You've done a lot of research work there. So are you going to do things like particularly making the Greenslade Road intersection safer? And they said, we don't know what to tell you because we're still waiting for the government's policy statement. Now they've put out their draft version, I guess you could call it. And so what's roughly, John, what does it say?
Give us
the flavour.
The transport policy statement is saying that we ought to take money off, altogether off shipping. So they were proposing to develop a coastal shipping service to reduce, maybe the main change is that they're saying that the Wakuta is no longer going to have to take account of carbon emissions when they make decisions. So all the other things follow on from that because carbon reduction using shipping or rail or in cities using buses would have been one of the main ways of reducing the carbon emissions from transport, which aren't as big as agriculture, but there are second biggest source of emissions. So that requirement has disappeared out of the government policy statement together with the funding for it. So things like the 50 million that they were putting into to Huia to keep the train running between Auckland and Hamilton. That's gone. Yeah. $30 million for the shipping. But both rail and bus and bike and walkway amounts are all down. Of course, we're having to pay more for road funding. So those are going up, the amounts that you pay to license a car and things like that.
Oh, yeah.
And these are all in that government policy statement to pay basically for the roads of national significance, which in the interview, Simeon Brown was claiming that they would improve the economy of the country. But so far, all the studies that have been done suggest that you invest a dollar in them and you get as little as 22 cents back, which isn't a good investment. And
they've got no idea what they're doing, have they?
Well, he is a banker and he is a lawyer, so he ought to understand what a cost-benefit analysis means when it's less than one.
We had this phrase last time National was in power. I think the ministers like saying it. Roads of national significance sounds so important, and it's much easier to understand and explain to people than we're going to do all these little things here that are quite important. But those are the main arterial roads, and they're important. But for your economy, everything has to function transport wise.
Because I went along the road out from Cambridge heading. Well, the State Highway 1 beyond Cambridge last week, and I was puzzled that they're still planning to build the road of national significance from Cambridge out to Piriri, because they're already doing a lot of improvement work along that road, including the junction with the road off to Tauranga.
State Highway 29, which that definitely needs some work.
So that work's already being done on the ground at the moment.
Yeah.
So I'm puzzled that they're still proposing to build a road which in the original cost benefit had a low benefit, and if they've improved the road already, then it will have an even lower benefit. And yet that's one of those that they're still pushing ahead with, and the roads of national significance. So, yeah, the whole thing's a puzzle, and to me it seems that it depends on looking back to what everyone thought in the 1950s when Auckland, the centre of Auckland, was flattened to build the motorways, and that was expected to solve all the traffic problems, and suddenly they realised that they had to add the clip-ons to the Harbour Bridge because there was far too much traffic.
Yeah, there's a big discussion there. But
they didn't realise that there was this phenomenon of traffic generation, so you make it easier for people to travel, and people travel more than they did before.
Yeah, and then they get to the end of the nice new motorway and trash the old road that's at the end of it.
Yeah.
So we need to wrap up. I just want to mention that you mentioned the 1950s thinking. That is the comment that's come through from roading engineers working in councils just by through the grapevine, I've heard, especially with issues of safety as well.
Uh-huh.
So that's something they've been focused on for a long time. All that annoying making us drive slowly, but it's actually good for our health stuff.
Because they're proposing to spend a lot more than the $200,000 that we mentioned for the traffic lights on Huntley railway station.
We should do a graphic of some traffic.
Put a park and ride there, and if they're going to close to Huia, then it's a waste of money putting a park and ride in Huntley station. So,
All right, folks, there we go. What a happy chat. Thank you for coming in. John, you're on the air at 6 o'clock tonight. You're going to some more details?
Yep.
More details from John, 6 o'clock tonight.
I didn't cover.
Yeah, and the Raglan Community Board meeting is going to be in Tamata Hall tomorrow, 1:30. That's Wednesday at 1:30, meeting proper at 2 o'clock. Let your friends in Tamata know they can get along to the Community Board meeting nice and easy.